Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Sipa, and I'm joined this week by Ken Lavin and Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Doing good.
All right, so today is our last podcast in February, and as you all know, I hope, February is the shortest month of the year. Is that a new factoid for either one of you, or are you previously aware?
I'm hearing this for the first time.
Oh, shit. mind blown, huh? All right, so, you know, February is short. So what vertically challenged major leaguers are we going to promote, extend, or trade?
They're just like me, for real.
Yep. First up, we have the 5'6", Jose Altuve. Then we have the 5'6" Hack Wilson. And last but not, a giant among men, the Goliath, the 5'8" Kirby Puckett.
My cat has a lot to say on the subject, apparently.
I know, I hear.
She's like right next to the microphone.
She's a big Kirby Puckett fan.
She loves Hack Wilson more than anything. Oh,
who doesn't? I mean, when your name is Hack.
So I'm going to extend Hack Wilson, and this has nothing to do with his baseball playing on the field. So if anyone plays out of the park baseball, they have a perfect team thing, which is like an ultimate team. You collect cards and stuff. And last year, I had a Hack Wilson card that played for me for like 6 months. So Hack Wilson gets extended.
Nice.
Fair.
He was incredible. Like every me and our friend of the podcast, Rich Staff, play it religiously. So we would go back and forth about our Hack Wilson escapades.
I'm promoting Hack Wilson too, because obviously everyone, when you think of Hack Wilson, you think like, yeah, he had 190 or whatever it was RBI, and that'll never be replicated most likely. But also in 1930, he had 200 hits and 50 home runs. So literally a quarter of all of his hits was home runs, which is crazy.
Yeah, he was incredible.
Yeah. And, you know, Altuve is really good also. Like, you know how Fangraphs has, like, little blurbs preseason, like what the people thought of him and then kind of recapping his season before and whatever else? Mm-hmm. Just reading all of those from like 2012 to 2020 when they stopped, it's kind of like it's an emotional roller coaster ride. The first couple of them are always like, ha ha ha, Jose Altuve is short. And then, you know, it's like, yeah, he hit pretty well. Like, huh, surprisingly, Jose Altuve did, you know, hit 346, and that's amazing. But, you know, he's short and can't sustain this. Yeah. And then you kind of progress, and then you get to like 2015, 2014, whatever it is, and like, holy shit, Jose Altuve is the best player in the game. He hit like 30 home runs and blah, blah, blah. It's funny to see the not outright dismissal of him at the beginning, but the kind of uncertainty, I guess.
Yeah.
To the progression from that into like, yeah, this guy is a bona fide G and, you know, one of the best guys in the game. So I'm extending Altuve. Actually, I'm promoting Altuve. And then poor Kirby Puckett gets traded.
Yeah, that's a victim of circumstance here.
Yeah. Ken, any compelling thoughts about any of these?
Not really. Options? I more or less agree.
All right. So this week, you know, we are on the cusp of the 2023 season. Spring training is basically ramping up now into actual games instead of just practice and individual drills and individual bats or whatever. So you see this more so at the beginning of spring training than as things get closer to the start of the season. But, you know, we have prospects and minor league farmhands getting into games, getting at bats, you know, showing some of their new tricks and making good impressions for themselves and blah, blah, blah. So far, a couple of the highlights, Brett Beatty, 2-for-2 with a homer. Jose Budo striking out a couple of guys in like an inning plus of work.
Throwing a cutter.
Yeah. Former Mets farmhand, Jake Mangum, you know, making a crazy catch. In addition, you just have kind of more mundane stuff, you know, random guys logging hits or random guys, you know, throwing scoreless innings against competition that is, you know, at a level above them, you know. So William Lugo logging a hit against a major league pitcher, for instance, or Nathan Lavender throwing an inning and striking out a guy, major league guys. It's like, all right, cool, you know, nice to see. You know, spring training is a time to get back in the groove of things and get back in shape and whatever, but it's also a time to work on stuff, be it new pitch, swing change, whatever. You know, maybe you lost some weight and you're in the best shape of your life, whatever it is. So this week, that is what we're going to talk about. We're going to go over the our top 25 prospect list for 2023. And we're basically just going to comment on one thing that, you know, we want to see these guys do in spring training, whether it's, I don't know, get in shape. Certain players, that is something, you know, it is a legitimate concern, possibly. You know, change something with the mechanics, add a new pitch, whatever it is. So do you guys want to start top to bottom or bottom to top?
I guess top to bottom, or?
Yeah.
Okay, sure. So our number one prospect, Francisco Alvarez, obviously. Ken, you have Francisco Alvarez, I believe.
Yes. So I guess what we'd like to see from him during spring training is continue to improve behind the plate and look like a, you know, major league quality catcher, and continue to hit big league pitching when, you know, presented with opportunities to do so. Basically proof of concept.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, he is practically there, so.
Yeah, there's nothing for him to learn other than the nuances he can only learn at the big league level.
Mm-hmm. So. In your estimation, what is going to be the more difficult of the two? Making strides as a catcher or making strides as a hitter who will be able to make major league quality at bats?
I'm way more confident in the bat than the glove. Right now I kind of see him being like a 2-day a week catcher, who DHs pretty much whenever he's not behind the dish. So I'd say defense definitely is definitely what I'm looking to see the most improvement on. And
I think that's why
ultimately the limiting factor for him is going to be how good can he be behind the plate.
I think that's why they also signed Narvaez and Extendido. Like, Alvarez isn't going to make the team out of camp, save an injury. And I think that design is, hey, catchers usually don't just debut this young anyway, so just stick him in AAA and he'll hit. He's going to hit like an insane amount in AAA, but he's there to work on his defense, which, with as veteran a staff as the Mets have, like, every single pitcher is older. And Senga's a rookie, but he's still been around and been in other leagues and been in professional leagues for a long time. Like, Alvarez learning that stuff while pitching to Verlander and Scherzer is going to be difficult because it's just that's life, you know? Like, he's not he's not throwing to, I mean, younger pitchers aren't throwing to him where there's more leeway, Verlander and Scherzer and guys like that are going to be like, hey, buddy, you need to know what you're doing because I'm 40 and I've been doing that. I'm trying to win a Cy Young. You know what I mean? So that's what I think AAA is going to be for him this year for about half a season before he hits too much.
I'm looking forward to the, hopefully, knock on wood, because he did struggle a little bit in AAA last year, but I think we can all say that that is just combination of getting the promotion. Yeah, exactly.
And he was hurt.
Much better, like, after the ankle injury, yeah. And,
yes.
And
yes.
He was called up immediately, so.
I, for one, am looking forward to, like, hopefully a crazy batting, you know, let's go with a 330 batting average and a 450 OBP a 600 slugging. I'm all for that. All right. Thomas, you mentioned Kodai Senga. He is number two on our list, and I believe that you have Kodai Senga to talk about.
I do. And it's really simple for Senga is continue to get used to the U.S. in terms of his teammates, in terms of the mounds, in terms of being in the major leagues instead of being in MPB, which is probably a little different off the field as well. I don't think it's crazily different. It's not like MPB is some backwater league. It's the second best
league
in the world.
It's not like he's coming from cricket or something.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Like, he's coming from professional baseball to professional baseball. It's going to be a little different, and there's going to be learning curves both on and off the field. Like, we've already kind of seen it where he had one bullpen where it was reportedly not great because of, I think the mound is a different level or something. I'm not 100% sure. It's something to that effect. But then he threw a live PB and looked great and struck out Alonso, and he made McNeil look bad, and because he's a good pitcher. You know, he's a talented guy. So it's just really, for me, I already know that he's talented. It's just getting used to his new environment and getting used to his new situation because it's a lot. It's probably a lot. He probably wakes up every day like, holy shit, man. Like this time last year, I was in my home country, and everyone spoke the same language as me, and I was an established ace. And now he goes to training camp, and his teammates are Verlander and Scherzer and all these superstars. And, you know, he's in New York City. Well, not yet, but the New York City media is there. So it's a lot different for him, I'm sure. So just get used to his new world, because that's going to matter. How he gets used, the more he gets used to stuff off the field, is the better he will perform on the field, just because comfort. So that's what I'm looking for him. And stay healthy, because you're a pitcher.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if nothing else, he will always have pizza to fall back on.
He seems to be getting along well with everything. Like, he doesn't seem overwhelmed when he talks to the media and stuff, which is a good thing. He seems to have the right temperament for New York City, because some people don't and some people do, I think. Even though it doesn't, you could not have the right temperament and play here for years like DeGrom did, and it was fine. But he seems to have the right temperament for the city, so that's a plus.
Have any of you guys ever been out of country where it's like really culturally different? You know, besides for just speaking, you know, like Spanish, but, you know, people kind of also speak English too, like.
I've been to Italy, and that was a little different, but not really. And I was just in Jamaica a few weeks ago, and that was pretty different. But nothing like crazy where the culture is completely different.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I have never been, so I have no – I can't imagine just being a regular person, let alone like someone who's going to have to now perform at a – not even just an elite level. Expectation.
World-class
level. Right, but in addition to that, then there's also the expectations. So you have to like – perform at a world-class level and then some.
Yeah.
Well,
it's a lot. It's a lot on this guy's shoulders, because that's how it is. But I think he has the right temperament to succeed, and he just looks good pitching-wise. So,
yeah,
so far.
I mean, it's been whatever, like a couple of
Twitter clips and a couple of interviews. But yeah, everything looks good so far.
Even the batters, like, they interviewed Alonso and Lindor after it, and they were like, he's good. Like, it was tough. It's not like they were teeing off on him, which is always a good sign. You always want to see that no matter when it is.
Well, I mean, he's going to be – I don't want to say that his success is more important than anyone else's on the team, but I feel like it kind of is. I mean, Verlander and Scherzer, like, we know – what we're getting, assuming they're going to be healthy, which is a big if, but you know, that's not something you could really guesstimate or anything like that. But I feel like Senga, more than anybody else, like, if Senga is good, this team is going to go places. If Senga struggles, then it's going to be a lot tougher.
Yeah. But if, like we talked about when they signed him, I'm pretty sure we did, the ceiling for him, if he's a third ace, which is it's possible.
Exactly. I didn't want to say that, but exactly. I mean,
I'm not going to say it's likely, because that's not how life works, but it's very possible. He was a five-time, I think it's best pitcher, like the equivalent of their Cy Young. Or no, I'm talking about a five-time champion over there and an ace for each of those teams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a top of the tier pitcher in that league, and he could definitely come over and be really good. There's been plenty of instances of that, and if that happens, then imagine trying to win a playoff series against that. If you're another team, you know, that's just such an advantage.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's hoping. Pressing my fingers, because if the Mets are good, then my outlook on every day is going to be good too. All right. Next up is third baseman Brett Beatty, and that's me. And basically, what I want to see from Beatty is be more patient at the plate, and basically, you know, wait for mistakes, wait for better pitches. Don't just go with what's given to him. You know, is that going to cause him to strike out more? You know, possibly, you know, if he sees a pitch that's kind of borderline and it gets called against him and he strikes out. Yeah, OK. But you know what? Strikeouts don't exist in a vacuum. He does have a good eye. He does walk a lot. So I don't really care if his strikeout rate jumps a little bit. You know, over the last 2 years, his strikeout rate has been in the minor leagues. So in Brooklyn, Binghamton, a little bit Syracuse, 24.6% strikeout rate. That's not that bad, given the amount of walks, you know, that he does draw.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in the major leagues, there have been 11 qualified players that have strikeout rates. I just picked arbitrarily. I just said, let's give Beatty 5% more strikeouts if he takes more pitches and he strikes out a little bit more. So in Major League Baseball last year, there were 11 qualified guys that had strikeout rates 27 or higher. Four were below average. And then seven, the rest were above average. With the amount of walks that Beatty takes, with the amount of power that he has, I think that definitely he could be a guy with a little bit of a more elevated strikeout rate, but also is able to post good offensive numbers. I mean, Eugenio Suarez struck out at like a 30% rate or 35% rate or something like that. And he also had a 131 WRC plus.
Yeah, he was really good last year.
Yeah, so I mean, all of Beatty's tools exist and they coexist, and it's not a vacuum. And if he strikes a little bit more, whatever, I'll take that. If he strikes out 20 more times, but that results in five more home runs, I'll take those five home runs every single day of the week. You know?
Yeah. I mean, he could probably make the team. Talent wise, I just don't know if they're going to fit him on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, right now with him, it's like a good question to have, because Escobar has enough in the tank that you can't just completely jettison him. So it's a good problem. It's better than like, oh shit, what are we going to do with third base? Like the Mets have basically had that problem for the last like decade or so.
Yeah, ever since Wright, even when they were like going to the World Series. Wright was there at the end, but most of that season it was just kind of like, oh, what the fuck do we put there?
Many, many borderline infielders have given their arms to try it's to true. Fix. TJ Rivera, Jeff McNeil a little bit. Several.
For once, it's nice to have like a logjam at the position rather than literally scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
All right, next up, our number four prospect is Kevin Parada. And who has Kevin Parada?
Ken. Let's kind of do everybody.
We traded, so Ken could start this one off.
All right, well, there you go.
So yeah, Kevin Parada just continued to make his swing less weird. The early returns on that are good. Although I have seen some, he is still doing the elbow thing a little bit, where the elbow starts really high and then comes down as he gets into hitting position, but it's not up at his eyes anymore, so that's good. Just continue tamping that stuff down so that he's quicker to the ball. Very simple. The exact changes you would hope they would make with the guy who's got all this elaborate setup going, make everything simpler so that he gets a couple tenths of a second back.
Yeah.
Also, keep working on defense, but I feel like the swing stuff is more important.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't hit, then it doesn't matter if you can't defend either, because there's no point in keeping it.
Especially because he's athletic enough where he's not a catcher or bust situation. Like, not saying Alvarez isn't a good athlete, but he's shorter, and you're not really going to put him at first base because he's too short for that, and he's not going to Pablo Sandoval's way to third base. Like, if Alvarez isn't catching, he's DHing, but you could probably put Parada in the outfield, and it'll be fine. And if he's a good enough hitter, then there you go. Who cares if he's like an okay left fielder? Like, you'll deal with it. Mm-hmm. But also, this is what real organizations do with the Mets. Yep. Just didn't develop hitters for years because outside of that one crop with like Nimmo and McNeil and Pete and all that, like they changed Pete's swing. If you look at college Pete and then look at Pete now, it's totally different. And you have to do that because some guy who's now like an accountant was pitching to Parada, you know, no offense to that guy. Like that guy,
he's a good accountant, damn it.
Like that guy's a way better baseball player than I ever was, but he's also not a major league player, you know, like
I mean,
the level of differences is so strong. You have to make those changes. And Parada's setup was so weird. It was going to probably be a negative for him.
Ken mentioned that, you know, it gives him, you know, we're just making up numbers, but it gives him an extra tenth of a second or whatever. But like
in theory,
that actually is like,
but that's
that
different.
I don't know what the actual number would be, but in theory,
right. But
the time it takes him to take his elbow and bring it down to where it needs to be for him to strike the ball.
Right. Those X amount of, you know, those fractions of a second, whatever whatever it actually comes out to when you're actually watching, you know, super slow-mo video and whatever, but those tenths and hundredths of seconds in Major League Baseball, they do matter. So any kind of minute, you know, advantage that you could give a hitter is, you know, these days it's necessary. You know, it's good. It's relevant. All right, number five prospect, shortstop Jet Williams. I had him. So basically, I want to see from Jet Williams this year is just to continue making solid contact off of off-speed pitches. You know, Jet was drafted out of high school last year. He got into a grand total of 10 complex games in 2022. Odds are he's going to be assigned to St. Lucie, I think, to start the season, the upcoming season. And, you know, that is kind of when you start seeing off-speed stuff. It's still rough off-speed stuff, you know, but to use an expression, you know, Lucas uses, that those breaking pitches are orders of magnitude above the stuff that he sees in travel ball, the stuff that he was seeing against, you know, high school, you know, other high school pitchers that he was facing. So, you know, he's got all the tools, he's got speed, he's got power. But obviously, you know, those things, it doesn't matter how fast you are, it doesn't matter how much raw power you have if you can't put good wood on ball. And, you know, I just, you know, I want to see him just have a good time against, you know, off-speed pitches.
Yeah, that's the important stuff. Just take more steps.
Mm-hmm. All right, number six is right-handed pitcher Blade Tidwell.
Me. I really just want Tidwell to stay healthy and keep doing what he's doing. He was really, that's the only reason why the Mets were able to draft him in the second round was his health. And while that's an obvious good thing to buy on that, it's also important that he now stays healthy and the Mets keep him, do as much as possible to keep him healthy. And that starts in spring. So get out of spring training healthy. I really don't care about spring training numbers in terms of really anyone. If Parada goes 0 for 10 in his few, we're going to see more of them because of the World Baseball Classic. But if Parada hits like 150 or 200 or whatever, but he changed his swing and there's a real reason why he's doing that, then I'm going to care. Wait, I'm going to forget about his spring training performance a week into the season. I won't even remember it probably 2 days after camp's over. You know, just if Tidwell gets lit up a little bit when he's facing Manny Machado or some shit, okay, you're not supposed to get him out yet, but you're supposed to, I want you to get to the dugout with the ice on your arm and be happy and fine, you know, so you can take your next reps. That's really what I look for the pitchers.
I can't argue with that. All right. Next up is our number 7 prospect, center fielder Alex Ramirez. Did anyone have Alex Ramirez?
I think Ken did.
Ken?
He's muted right now.
Ken?
Well, I hope Ken's... bad about that.
Okay. I was about to say, I hope Ken is okay.
Yeah, sorry. Alex Ramirez, similar to Kevin Parada, simplify his swing. We don't have any evidence to suggest that he has done that, at least to my knowledge. But he's got a lot going on with the hand movement. I would like to see that cut down a little bit for reasons we discussed with Parada, that it, you know, give him a little more reaction time. Other than that, he's still very young. He's in big league camp, I believe. He played yesterday. Just look like he belongs, I guess, would be a good expectation for him for spring and beyond.
I personally am more worried. I guess that's maybe worried is even too extreme a word, but I have more concern, I guess, about Ramirez's swing than I do Parada's swing.
Yes.
Okay. I agree with that too.
I agree. There's a lot more moving parts. Parada, you could always say he, regardless of what's going on while he was setting up, he always got into ideal hitting position.
Yep. That's exactly the right time.
Yep.
You can't really say the same for Ramirez, and we've seen guys who have elaborate setups like he does. Amed Rosario is a good example of this, where he did like a weird like hand circle as he was going to the ball. Things like that can either create timing issues later on when timing becomes much more precarious with better stuff, or just leads to sync issues. So I'd like to see him simplify things a little bit.
Agree.
Since we're talking about these two guys, will we ever see another Kevin Youkilis again?
I think the game, like the way the game is taught now, I think that will get I think that'll get weeded out with players. Yeah, there we go, coached out.
Maybe.
How many weird
batting depends do we have? Yeah, so I'm of the opinion that as long as you get into position at the right time. So even Parada, right, where we would like to see things get simplified, and he has already started to look like he's simplifying things. As long as you get to hitting position, I don't really care what weird comfort shit you have to do to keep yourself comfortable while the windup starts, you know? So Kevin Youkilis, you know, he always got into hitting position. It doesn't really matter to me. I think guys will still do weird shit while setting up. It's just how weird and, you know, how late is the shift from weird shit to where you need to be.
Yeah.
So I think we'll see Kevin Youkilis's. They'll just be fewer and farther between and maybe not quite as weird.
I can't wait for the next prospect to go full Craig Counsell and just like put the bat. Like, why even hit like that? So bizarre.
Craig Counsell was basically standing on his tippy toes.
Like the bat all the way above his head.
All the way above his head. And then who was it? Jeff Bagwell. He basically just like sat down on the ground with his crouch.
Yeah. I think we'll see more something like that, like a Bagwell type thing, more than a Euclid type thing, because I could see someone just hitting the ball real far because of the power that you're putting behind all of it.
Good times.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, our next prospect now is our number 8 prospect, third baseman Mark Vientos.
That would be me. And Vientos actually could not make the Mets, I don't think. That's barring he just destroys every left-hander he sees and gets Darren Ruff off the roster. But if he keeps hitting, like just hit, I would like to see him hit more well-roundedly, hit righties more. Because he destroyed lefties in the minors. He struggled against the righties in the minors. So, like, I don't really see him hitting well against righties in the majors. Just from that, it's hard. They're better. But you could probably shelter Vientos and have him be a valuable member of your team for, like, a year or two before you probably want to improve on that. And if Ruff starts off slow, I could see him being that guy, taking over half the DH spot. So just hit lefties, continue what you're doing with lefties and hit righties a little bit more to try to get yourself a more position to be like, hey, I could be a DH for this organization as well as anyone else, because he's not going to field anywhere. It's not going to happen. There's Beatty and it's just there's too many people. Like there's his best position's first base. And unless Alonso gets hurt, he's not going to be a first baseman. And there's Escobar and Beatty ahead of him at third. So his path to major league playing time this year is being a platoon DH, which is in his wheelhouse of expertise and possibility. So just keep hitting, really. Hit the ball, hit righties, continue to hit lefties, and I could see him being in Queens halfway through the season when Ruff gets DFA'd.
Here's hoping Ruff gets DFA'd. All right. Number 9 is shortstop Ronnie Mauricio. And basically, I want to see Mauricio just be more selective at the plate. He has a lot of red flags. I think we've discussed that a lot. I think some people have disagreed with us. Some people have agreed. But what we consider those red flags, I think a lot of them boil down to just the same root issue.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, a lot of his red flags, not all of them, will be fixed. But, you know, they'll be improved. I think if he's just more selective at the plate, you know, his pitch recognition, not the best. His swing is long, he's aggressive, and kind of like what I was talking about Beatty before. If he's more selective and a little bit more passive at the plate, he's going to strike out more. But I'm willing to deal with some more strikeouts if it means that, you know, he draws a few more walks, he makes better contact with the things that he does decide to swing at. So, you know, I'll trade that for a little bit more Mauricio productivity and better outcomes from those at-bats. All right, number 10 prospect now is Dominic Hamill. I also have Dominic Hamill, so basically I want to see him refine the command. Hamill led the system last year in strikeouts. He had 145, that's good, but he also led the system in walks with 54, which is less good. Mechanics are not bad. They're not terrible. They're not like, oh my God, this is reason why he's walking so many people. You know, he has some stiffness and a little crossfire, but you know, those things are not causing all of the walks. More so, I think, is that his stuff, just there's a lot of movement in all of it. His two seamer, his slider, curveball, you know, changeup, all those things have a decent amount of movement, you know, run or drop or whatever. And I think just learning through throwing more pitches, you know, and whatever, learning to just better harness that stuff and keep the stuff in the zone or close enough in the zone to get batters to, you know, swing and go fishing, whatever. I think that stuff is key to Hamill's future growth and success. And, you know, he doesn't have, like, ace upside or anything like that, but he is basically, you know, a couple more walks, a couple of more, you know, keeping things in the zone a little bit more, turning into a fairly reliable, you know, mid-rotation kind of starter. He's got the size, he's got the pitching arsenal, he's got all that kind of stuff. The ingredients are there. You just want to see the command tighten up a bit, and, you know, the floor is going to increase, ceiling's going to increase. So that's what I want to see, just get better with the command.
And those guys are so valuable to an organization, even if the Mets are spending money as much as they are, because you could just spend it elsewhere then. You don't have to sign Jose Quintana for $10 million, wherever they did. Because,
yeah, exactly. Because Jose Quintana is a great example.
Like, yeah, you still want to sign Verlander and Scherzer, but you could do that and then have, if David Peterson was a little better, you don't have to worry about this. Or Tylor Megill wasn't hurt a ton, then you don't have to, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, and next up is our 11th top prospect, right-handed pitcher, Kelvin Ziegler. And I bet that's Ken.
I think
muted
he's
again.
Me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Am I muted?
No.
No, you're good.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't muted. let's see. Kelvin Ziegler. Really, just stay healthy and continue to you know, show the big stuff that we've seen from him, or that
I feel like
to be drafted high.
I feel like all the pitchers have the same thing.
Literally, stay like, healthy.
Stay healthy and don't walk as many people, because that's like every of these pitchers' problems.
Pretty much.
Yep. I have nothing really else to say about Kelvin Ziegler.
Yeah, I mean, he's
young.
Had a fair year. He had a fair year, and the two biggest issues were basically he kind of got hurt, and that kind of threw things off, threw him off his groove, and he walked a lot of guys.
Yep.
All right, number 12 is right-hand pitcher Mike Vassell.
It's pretty similar. Stay healthy. Continue to get out of spring training where you're on your feet, but also I'm a little worried he's going to go out like Jose Budo a little bit, where he doesn't have that dominant other pitch. Like, his best pitch is a changeup, and we saw how that is a problem with Budo, where it kind of caps your ceiling a little bit. And then here Budo came back with a cutter, and if he has a cutter and a changeup, then we're kind of talking here, you know? So I would like to see Vassell develop another pitch and develop something else alongside of his changeup, because I mean, unless you're Trevor Hoffman, I'm not seeing much of a ceiling or Johan Santana. Like, it's going to be difficult for you if your best pitch is a change. So if Vassell could do something like that, then we're kind of talking a little bit more, because I like him the least, I think, out of all that that crop of pitchers kind of is in my mind in the same place. Hamill, Vassell, and Ziegler, they're all kind of similar to me. I just kind of lump them together, but I think Vassell's at the bottom right now because I think there's more stuff with the other two guys, and I would like to see him catch up a little bit, because that'll help him. That'll help his career.
Can't disagree with that. All right, number 13 is outfielder Stanley Consuegra.
Stay healthy.
Yeah, please.
Stay on the field, goddammit, please.
Did he look?
Yeah,
like he looked Alex Ramirez-ish, like light.
Pretty good.
Yeah, he was like Alex Ramirez light last year when he was on the field.
You can make an argument that he's a better prospect, I think. He's 3 years, 3 years older, 2 years older, and doesn't have any more experience because he missed so much time. So
yeah.
Stay on the field, continue getting good experience.
All right, number 14 is third baseman Jacob Bramer.
Oh, that's me. I would like to see him continue his approach and keep it going, the ability to walk. The good thing is I don't feel like that's a thing that goes away. I feel like if you have a solid ability to lay off pitches that are balls, it'll be a learning experience when pitchers are better and they're able to, their breaking pitches are able to confuse you more. But really, I liked the Raymer pick a lot, and then I like what he did right away, and I would just see him continue to do what he did last year on a longer scale, and that starts in spring, just because he didn't play much, obviously, with how the draft is now. It's so late in the year that everyone's draft year is kind of a – I could kind of ignore it and move on. So short that unless you're totally awful or totally, like, you're hitting, like, 700 in 2 weeks, and I'm like, oh, shit. But otherwise, he was good, and – I would like to see him continue his approach. Don't get out of your approach, because I think your approach is a smart one. And I could kind of see you being like, well, I need to be a little more aggressive, da da da. But I think that would be a mistake, because I think where he's, how his approach is now is something that could really build for the future. So yeah, just keep doing what you're doing, kind of, and get a little better, obviously.
Good habits to get into young.
Yes, yes. Good habits to get into when you're young, I think, is the big thing. And I feel like it's impressive that a guy coming out of high school has been able to do that, because he probably got pitched around so much just since he's able to get drafted. And, you know, a high school kid is probably like, oh, I don't want to face him. I'll face the kid who is not going into the MLB draft next year.
It's a fair strategy. All right, next up is number 15, Joel Diaz. And same thing, I would like to see him just refine his command. He allowed way too many walks. He walked 25 guys last year in 55.1 innings, so that's 4.1 walks per nine. And then you combine that with the fact that he was just allowing a ton of hits, a ton of hard contact, and, you know, it was a recipe for disaster. And lo and behold, he, I don't want to say he had a terrible, terrible season, but it was not not the best. And I was actually looking at his stats, and I didn't even realize this, but so he had 16 appearances last year, and he only had one single outing where he pitched, where he did not allow any runs, which is kind of not great.
Yeah.
But, you know, he is talented. There's plenty of talent there, but just, you know, suffice to say he needs more seasoning, but that's okay because he was 18 last year and today is actually his birthday. So happy birthday, Joel Diaz. He's 19
friend
now.
Friend of the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he was 18. He was playing in the U.S. for the first time in his career. He was 4 years younger than league average. He didn't light up the world. Big whoop. He did decent. You know, you saw enough good things to say, okay, this is not an abject disaster of a season. We have some optimism going forward. So just I think there's reason to be optimistic and controlling those controllables like walks is the first thing on the list to-do list, you know. All right, next up is number 16, Matthew Allen. Not much to say there. I think we can all agree. Don't amputate your arm. I don't know.
At some point, return to pitching.
Yeah, at some point, return to pitching. Just don't, you know, just give it one last try, see what happens. Don't just retire. So now that brings us to number 17, Jose Budo. And that was someone I had. And basically, what I want to see from him is I'm kind of over Jose Budo. I just want to see him learn to warm up as a reliever, be able to get up quickly, because I do not see him as a starter.
Nope.
He's, you know, the fastball is fine, major league fastball. Changeup, it's an above average pitch. But that's basically it. I know that, you know, yesterday, well, at this point, when the show gets posted on Monday, Saturday's game, he was throwing, you know, like a curveball slider thing. Maybe that slider replaces. Excuse me. He throws a curveball as a slider cutter thing. He throws a curveball and it's not good. Maybe this pitch replaces the curveball. Maybe it's just conjunction. I don't know. We have an entire season to see, but I don't have faith in it because you know, you don't think that at this point where he's been a professional for like 5 years that they haven't tinkered around to see if anything else that he could do is decent.
He was in a bad Mets organization.
Like, yes, I agree, but at the same time,
I want to give everyone kind of the benefit of the doubt because I do not legitimately think that the old Mets would have even thought to teach him a cutter. Like look what they did to everyone else, every other pitcher. They would just let him do whatever, like whatever they were doing. So, I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be a starter, but if he learns how to throw a cutter and it's good, then he could be a reliever.
Yeah, I mean, I think he could be a reliever right now with with a third pitch that is anywhere from fringy to possibly above average. Who knows? You know, because we need to see it. Obviously, he threw like one inning of work or whatever. But, you know, basically he's ridden the combo that he has now into the upper minors, and he's looked good on the surface, but it just the guy just seems to be tailor-made to be a reliever. He's really good the first time through the order, and he's really bad through the second time through the order, to the point where I think he only threw he only got into the seventh inning three times last year, you know. And, you know, he is there's the ingredients to get major league hitters out. And, I see more utility to get, let's say, 20 to 25 okay innings from him as a reliever than getting, let's say, 100 solid minor innings and then 20 not great major league innings as
two,
a spot starter
bad
or whatever.
Starts or something.
Right, right. He has more utility to the Mets being an okay reliever than he is being a not great spot starter.
But I'm fine with that. Like, I don't think that's a problem, really, you know?
Yeah. And it's probably in his best interest, too, just because there's more reliever roles, there's more of opportunities for him to, you know, the ultimate goal is to make it to the majors and stay there for however long. And the path to get there is much easier out of the bullpen than it is as a starting pitcher.
If he could be like a two inning at a pop reliever throwing a changeup and a cutter or whatever. Cool. Seth Lugo was real helpful for the Mets for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, all you need is a decent fastball and one other really good secondary pitch and you kind of fake it and make it from there.
Yeah.
All right, after Budo, we have number 18, right-handed pitcher, Leonel Arváez.
That's me. Arváez is interesting to me, where he had kind of a tale of two seasons last year. He was really good in St. Lucie, pitched with 2.76 ERA in 11 games, four starts. then they called him up. To Florida in the Coast League, not in St. Lucie. They called him up to St. Lucie, and he kind of got lit up. Three starts, five games, had a 6 ERA. His walk rate balloons by, like, from 1.5 to 6.2 per nine. The strikeout state went down a little bit from 13.5 to 11.4 per nine. And so I really just want to see him get back to the St. Lucie, the Gulf Coast performance. Obviously, that was a learning experience. I feel like that happens with almost every player. You call them up midseason and they get worse because the competition is suddenly way better. And the things that were working in a lower level, the guys are able to lay off that pitch, or they're able to drive that pitch a little more, or they're able to like make more contact, whatever it is. You know, there's a million things. Mm-hmm. It's just better competition. And he's an interesting guy. He's a big spin rate guy. He throws pretty hard, mid-90s. So just get back to what you were doing. Less walks. The strikeouts were kind of still there. It went down from 13 to 11 per nine, but that's still a lot. It's not like it went down from 13 to 6 per nine. So it's really – I would like to see him continue to, like, get the command a little bit back under control, and that might have been a cornucopia of things. It might have been guys are just – he's throwing a curveball in the dirt that a guy's swinging at in – the coast, the guy's laying off of it in single A. That's a learning experience for him. So kind of continue to grow, because I think there's something there with him, legitimately. Even if it might be a reliever, it might be a swing guy, but the spin rate's very encouraging, and the strikeout, the swing and miss stuff is very encouraging. So continue to hone your craft and keep the ball in the zone. Like every freaking starter, every pitcher we've talked about, I feel like. But that's the name of the game. That's the difference between being a major leaguer and not.
So basically the common thread is get better with your commands. And I think this next player is going to be something that buckles that trend. And that guy is number 19, right-handed pitcher, Bryce Montes de Oca.
Get work. No. Please get
work. Throw strikes. Please.
Really?
Please, God, throw strikes.
Because I think he has major league stuff. Yes. Honestly. I really do.
Yeah.
But he does not have anywhere near major league command.
No.
The good news is with his stuff, I don't think he needs, you know, much more command.
No, he doesn't need to be Greg Maddux, but it needs
to be. if he's like near the plate a majority of the time, he's at least an up and down guy, which is, you know, useful. And if, I don't know, I think Jeff and Jared said they thought he had like 20 command. If he gets to 30, great. He's a big leaguer. If he gets to 40, he might be like a really, really good big leaguer. So
you might be a leverage guy at 40, to be honest. Yeah,
exactly. Right. Instead of a churn guy, which, again, still useful, especially given the Mets don't have many churn guys. You know, well, just throw strikes, please, for the love of God.
Yeah. I mean, the health stuff with him is obvious. We've been talking about that since he was at like Missouri. But really, if he's around the plate, you should be using him as much as possible because he has stuff. He has more stuff than most of the guys that they're going to have in front of him.
Mm-hmm. All right, number 20 is shortstop Jesus Baez.
That's also
for
Ken.
For Baez, he should be coming stateside next year. Just adjust to living in America.
Find the play. Get more command.
Guys who are just coming over from the DR, I really don't care about the results. Just acclimate to being a professional in America and, you know, try not to get too down. We've all heard the stories of Wilmer Flores being, you know, depressed and, you know, where was he? Kingsport. Just try your best to acclimate to, you know, living in a new place away from your family, presumably for the first time.
Yeah, no, it is definitely a underreported tough hardship to have to deal with. So, especially at 18.
Performance-wise, you know, whatever we get out of him is gravy, but just acclimate. Or, you know, take that adjustment.
Mm-hmm. All right, next up is number 21 prospect right-handed pitcher, Junior Santos.
Ooh, this is a fun one because I really want to see him take a step finally. I feel like the Mets were so aggressive with him for so long, and he just kind of treaded water, which is not a good thing, but it's not a bad thing either. It just is. Mm-hmm. But at some point, you got to take the next step. I know the Mets were aggressive with you, but at some point, you got to show something. And I think if – I know Jarrett tweeted something similar to this because he quote tweeted someone, I don't remember what it was, about Jose Budo's cutter, his new cutter. And if they're doing stuff like that, then Santos is the perfect guy to teach that, because then all of a sudden he's got another pitch and it's a good pitch and he's flying through the minors a little bit. You know, you're getting him up to speed quicker. I think he's probably going to be a reliever, but at the end of the day, he needs another pitch. And I think if the Mets are getting smarter now and they're hiring more people, which they very clearly did in the offseason. I feel like they hired everyone to help their minor league system. I feel like every day there was a new hire that was tweeting out that they're getting hired by the Mets. Just get them another pitch and let's get it moving a little bit, because I know you're still young, but it's been like 4 years. Yeah, I feel like
won't be for long.
Yeah. It's at some point the Mets being aggressive and pushing you, it's like, you've already been here for years now. So it's time to start taking the next steps, and I want to see that, and I would like to see him get another pitch. And I think the Mets are starting to get a little smarter with their player development. I think we've already seen it. We've seen it with their different ways of drafting. So these are the guys who will pop, you know? So. Mm-hmm.
All right, next up is number 22, center fielder Willy Fañez. And what I want to see from him is I want to see him steal bases. You know, one of the two. He wasn't terrible in the DSL last year, but he wasn't particularly great either. He did two things decently. He drew walks. He had a 9.6 walk rate, which is solid. And then he stole 10 bases in 13 attempts over 32 games, which is decent. And, you know, I think that stolen bases kind of are going to become, they kind of got forgotten about in the recent modern era of baseball. I think they're going to kind of become more useful with some of the new rule changes and new philosophies of the game and all that kind of stuff. So it would be nice to see a guy that has that, you know, above average speed and they're, you know, work with him basically from the beginning to make him an effective base dealer. Mets don't really have too many guys in the system that are like good base dealers. Omar De Los Santos led the system in steals last year. He had
7,000.
Yeah. But, you know, that's a kind of outlier, you know, because after him, then the next highest was 22, Carlos Dominguez and Jalen Palmer. And the last, you know, 2021 and 2022, that's basically been like about it. You know, the best guys in the system steal around 20 bases. Then you have a couple of guys, you know, in the teens, and everyone else is just a mush-mush underneath that. But, you know, I like stolen bases, and Fanyas is a guy that has the potential to be a base dealer, so it'd be cool to
It feels like such a slow organization.
Yeah, it really is.
Like, I wrote that Tim LoCastro season preview, and I was like, damn, like, this, the major league team is slow. And you're looking on the right, the minors, and I'm like, who's fast? There's just no one. There's no guy who is like, you know, Tim LoCastro is. He's like crazy fast. But they just never really placed a premium on it, I don't think, as an organizational philosophy, which might change with the new rules, like you said. But it'd be nice to see.
Even the guys that are like average or decent have average or you know, or so foot speed or, you know, or good in the outfield in terms of range. They don't steal a lot of bases.
I mean, Nimmo can't steal a base to save his life. He's fast.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly.
Ahmed Rosario couldn't steal a base. He was fast. Like, I don't know.
Ahmed Rosario looked like he was taking like four steps in quicksand every time he'd go.
It was crazy. And the guy is fast. Like, it's not like he's a slow man. And but I don't know if the Mets
like just, five steps, it felt like he was covering no ground.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was an organizational thing where the Mets didn't want to teach base stealing, didn't know how to teach it, but.
He did like a Flintstones run with the first couple of steps like and you don't move, and then after you go when you finally start going,
it's like the legs running in a circle in a cartoon where they're just move, they're more going in a circle, it's not moving.
Yeah, I think we all can agree that it's very slow, a very slow organization, literally in terms of guys running, and kind of philosophically too, they've kind of been behind a little bit. Hopefully that changes. Next is number 23, right-hand pitcher Eric Orsi. I have him, and I kind of was like, okay, a lot of these other guys, they need to work on the commands, you know, throw more pitches in the zone. So I said to myself, you know what, let's do something radically different here. I want Eric Orsi to throw more pitches out of the zone. Basically, his biggest red flag last year was all the home runs that he gave. I mean, his health, obviously, but also he gave up 11 home runs in 47 innings, which comes out to a 2.1 home run per nine rate. And, you know, obviously, if you throw something down the heart of the plate, that's more likely to get a home run. But also, the sweet spot to hit home runs is basically down and in, where you can like golf ball pitch. And Eric Orsi's best pitch, his splitter, that's basically what it kind of does. It dives and it goes down. And his walk rate right now is very good. Basically, last season and in 2021, he walked exactly fourteen guys in basically the same amount. Yeah, that would be really good.
I mean, 14 is crazy anyway, but
yeah. And basically 50 innings of, you know, one year is like 47.1 innings, and then the other year is like 50.2 innings. So, you know, round that to about 50 innings or so. 14 guys in 50 innings. That's very good. It comes out to a 2.5 walk rate per nine. That's really good. I'm, you know, let him if he walks a couple more guys, you know, if he walks 25% more guys, that's an 18. That's 18 guys that he walks. That's still a 3.2 walk rate. If he walks 50% more guys, he, you know, 21 guys in about 50 innings, that's a 3.8 walk rate. That's still not bad. And if he's able to basically throw that splitter out of the zone underneath it, you're going to get guys to miss. You're going to get them to go fishing, you know, and you're going to hopefully, you know, give up fewer home runs because it's not in the zone. So the guys are not going to be able to make good contact off of it. So I think Eric Orsi being able to throw, you know, those purpose pitches out of the zone, you know, under the zone, whatever, would make him more effective. Number 24 now, center fielder Simon Juan.
Juan is an interesting player because obviously we haven't seen a lot of him. He was a highly touted IFA, but he played 53 games in the DCL in the DSL last year, I mean, at 16, and he only hit 219, 310, 323, which is a 77 WRC plus. He struck out only 23% of the time, which is something that is very interesting to me, that he didn't 23% of the time is fine if that lasts up into the majors, that it's a totally normal strikeout rate. I would like to see him walk a little bit more. It was only 8%. But also, he's another guy who could run. He had 16 steals in 53 games, so I would like to see them expand that part of his game. But really, I just want him to see get more comfortable playing professionally. We probably won't see much of him in spring training just because how young he is. He's only – is he even 17? Yeah, he turned 17 in July. So he's going to turn 18 in the middle of the season. It's he's just young, and we're probably not going to see much of him. But I would like to see him kind of just get more used to being a professional and everything that goes along with it because it's a learning curve. He wasn't bad enough where I'm totally worried about him, though. So cool. Just keep getting used to life as a professional baseball player at 17 years old. There's not much else to say.
Yeah, something when I was looking at Fania's stats and then I was looking at Simon Juan's stats, their walk rates are pretty solid for guys their level and their age. And B, you know, historically, you know, you don't walk off the island, that whole trope. Their walk rates are like really solid.
There's a lot of looking at them, there's a lot of reason to be like, oh, I could see them.
Mm-hmm.
I could see the vision with them.
Yeah.
Obviously,
yeah.
They're very far away, and we're not even going to consider them. I mean, when did we start caring about Alvarez as a prospect? He was like 19. Like, we got a few years left for these guys to start, unless you're Ken. Ken knew him. Ken knew about the whole time. But
Ken lives in the future.
But in all seriousness, these guys are so young that I could see the vision with them, but it's just getting them there, and that's a lot.
Mm-hmm. All right, last but not least is our number 25 prospect, third baseman, William Lugo.
For Lugo, I'd like to see him cut the strikeouts a little bit. He's not egregiously high, but, you know, 23-24% K rate. And just continue hitting, and especially continue hitting for power. So, you know, we saw a little bit of a jump in his ISO last year. Strikeouts, hopefully down a little bit. Power, hopefully up a little bit.
If those trends continue, excellent.
Yep.
All right, so, you know, we'll see how all these guys do. Obviously, we got about, what is it? Yeah, we got about a month before the 2023 season starts, so.
We probably, like I mentioned this a little bit before, but we actually might see more of these guys than normal because of the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah.
Especially with the Mets. It's like their whole infield going.
Yeah, they have about 12 guys going.
Yeah, so we're going to see a lot of the infielders, like a lot of Ronnie Mauricio, and William Lugo is probably going to play and stuff. So it'll be interesting. It'll be curious to see how that works just with them getting more and more playing time in spring. I wonder if that's going to help or hurt them. I can't imagine it hurts, but.
All right. Well, if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you could send us an email at our email address from complexofqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. Ken is at KenLavin91. And Thomas is at SadMetSzn, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Rate and review them. And of course, we thank you for listening. And we'll be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.